Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Come on in to Eerie House Radio, that is. Another fun night of fine entertainment. Hello, Pogs. I'm Dale Cage from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from The Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and the upcoming Face of One.
Woo! Yeah. Now, we're kind of dovetailing off of yesterday, if you will.
Yes.
Of course, we did a nice special on Lon Chaney Jr. Dug up a bunch of audio for that. And, gosh, what else is Lon Chaney known for? Best for is being the Universal's Wolfman. Well, tonight, it's CBS Radio Mystery Theater with the story The White Wolf.
Yes, a wonderful gothic tale of a werewolf. And very well acted, and the music is superb, as always. And sure to put a bit of a chill down the spine by the time the story is done.
Yep. And what better vehicle than CBS Radio Mystery Theater? Fast becoming a Saturday favorite around here. Not only does it fit the time slot, but they're quality shows.
Yeah, we've had some wonderful shows here, and Dale, I just can't tell you how many wonderful more shows there are. I mean, they did, close to 1,400 shows during their time there, and those are all different shows. Those aren't the same shows. Those are all different shows. They have more broadcasts than that. Every show was repeated, but is absolutely fabulous. The funny thing is, at the same time, for one half a year, Hyman Brown was also doing a weekend program, kind of supported by the National Education Association, the General Mills Adventure Theater, and used many of the same writers and actors. And it was on Friday and Saturday nights, many times using classic tales like Moby Dick and other dramatizations as well of areas like A Couple of Eighty, A Couple About Lindbergh, and things like that. So, very interesting that he did all these programs, and then at the same time, he was also doing two other programs a week for half a year. Then they repeated that half a year, it was kind of done. But some of those stories were very, very good stories as well. One I'm thinking off the top of my head. One is A Very Special Place, and the other one is their rendition of Mowgli, of the Jungle Book. Very, very well done. Of course, what do you expect?
If 1,400 shows from CBS Radio, different shows, mind you, of CBS Radio Mystery Theater, gives you any idea how long we plan to be doing this. We can only play about 50 of those a year, and that's only if we played one every single Saturday. So think about that and do the math in your head. We'll wait.
Wow. And you know what kind of blocks that off too is the fact that at least once a month we present a program we had never played before here on Eerie House Radio. There's so many great ones. You know, the big ones, the Inner Sanctums, the Witch's Tale, the Hermit's Cave, and so many of those great stories. But when you look at every so often we pull out another program that has never a series that has never been played before. Like we had, even just a Cavalcade of America and Adventure Ahead. I'm just looking back here in this month, there are two programs right there. Of course, we had Box 13 of the Whisper Men. That was a show we'd never played before. We'd had A Vile Advance, certainly Suspense is a one that we've had a lot of Sleep No More. We've had two of these within the last month, and we'd never had one before that. So, You know, you turn around and not only do you have these great classic shows, but we have a few episodes here and there of other series that fit into a particular topic that just really help. It just really extends the scope of what we share here at Erie House.
Yep, and we're going to keep volleying it over to you, including next week, which we'll get into. There's just get your science fiction ears ready for next weekend. But tonight it's the White Wolf. I love a good werewolf tale. I mean, we started talking last night a bit about all the different renditions of the Wolfman as he was portrayed in films. You know, beyond Chaney, there was Paul Naschy and Oliver Reed and others. I kind of like
the
werewolf
and
the publication
of comedy. And a publication of a comedy about
yeah.
with werewolves.
That we did. Yeah. Another favorite of mine, Dave, in the movies, I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a 1956 film just called The Werewolf, and it was, I think they try to modernize the story and make him more of a science-y werewolf than a supernatural werewolf. You know, it's a low budget, but pretty well shot, and not a horrible story.
I did not see that one, no. I will have to look for it. You know, it can be very interesting when they modernize things, because that isn't, if they just reboot the same thing over and over and over again, like they do Spider-Man every three or four movies, and Batman every three or four movies, that kind of a thing. But when you take something like that and you work to modernize it a bit, that's not just a reboot. That's bringing about it, telling the same tale in a different way. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but I think that does keep storytelling fresh sometimes.
Sometimes it does. And this film that I'm referencing, according to IMDb, two scientists come across, and I haven't seen it for a while, so having this synopsis is pretty good. Find an unconscious man in a automobile wreck. They take him back to their lab and inject him with a serum they've been working with. Sure, first thing I'd think of. Unfortunately, the serum has the effect of turning the man into a murderous werewolf. Nice.
But of course.
But the makeup wasn't too bad, and it was a decent little. It's a fun movie to watch. It's being low budget, and if you've never seen it, I think it will likely exceed expectations a little bit, unless I'm building it up too much here.
Well, you know, and you had the made-for-TV movie, and I kind of gave you a kick out of it. It would definitely be considered low budget. Probably about the only werewolf movie that was it cost more for the actors than it did for the makeup. The public domain, falling into public domain movie, Moon of the Wolf with David Janssen and Barbara Rush, really wasn't a bad little movie. They didn't and it's the first werewolf movie that really didn't rely upon really hardly any kind of a special effect and did their best not to show the werewolf. Partially so that I think that they could try and keep the identity of who the werewolf was a bit of a secret, although they did a lot of foreshadowing as to who it was.
Yeah. And, of course, some other really low-budget public domain werewolf movies that the horror hosts like to host is Werewolf of Washington and Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Classics. And they're in the public domain for a reason.
Yeah, sometimes movies are, sometimes they're there by accident. The whole idea of public domain, it really is not so people's grandchildren can live off of that particular thing, but so that, you know, the person who creates it, or in this case the business that creates it, is able to to make money from it for more than just an original airing or making or something like that. It was never intended to be a fodder for great grandchildren, that kind of a thing, which is what has happened sometimes when you look at, you know, the Conan Doyle story, because his last living daughter, she died about 5 years ago, and you still have to go through his estate before you can really officially have anything accepted in the Sherlock Holmes genre. And that's just, to me, a bit much.
I have mixed feelings about public domain and copyrights. I do. Again, I don't want to see an artist get cut out of his due, or an owner of a copyright if they, you know, purchased it legally or whatever, you know, and as some places do, they'll purchase rights to a handful of films, you know.
Yes.
As long as we get the opportunity to see them or hear them, like tonight's radio story.
Yes, very much so. And then for quite a while after it went off the air, Hyman Brown had them locked up. He brought them out once for about half a year in kind of a national syndication. And according to Hyman, actually, because he was paying royalties to the actors when they were replayed, and actually because of the royalty situation, he really wasn't making any money with it. So he just, after half a year, he just shut it down. Now, it was interesting that then it came back one other time as a national public radio broadcast. And most, unfortunately, most of your stations did not pick it up, because there was something that was going on. There was, they were kind of having a contest. Hey, how would you host the Mystery Theater put together a short thing? And I was kind of thinking of putting something together. I was busy doing other things at the radio station at the time, but it would have been cool. I really should have gone ahead and tried, but unfortunately, no station around here, Cleveland, Akron, Youngstown, picked it up. I'm thinking there was a station. Oh, the only one I know in Ohio that did it was Cincinnati, and it was interesting that they were kind of had to put out an open feeling for people to try and do something to host that, and I did have a bit of an interest in trying it, but I always had a bit of a drawback on my voice, and I didn't think that would have worked anyway, but it may have. You never know.
One never knows, but tonight's story, a good one. Do we have an original broadcast date for The White Wolf?
We do. It is program number 591 from January 26th, 1977.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. I'm always delighted when I come across a new gothic tale, but never more so than when it happens to be written by someone unlikely. Say, for example, Captain Frederick Marryat, who was popular in his day with young readers for his tales of sea adventure, such as Midshipman Ready. This one, however, is a savage, bloody, haunting tale of another color, or to be precise, a wolf.
What is it, Herman?
There, Father. Through the trees. The White Wolf.
Give me my gun.
No, I have a bead on her already.
Why do you say her?
Because Marcella thinks it's a she-wolf. Now.
No!
Why did you knock my gun in the air?
Because, don't you see? It is not a wolf who comes to us, but a woman. A beautiful woman.
Our mystery drama, The White Wolf, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Norman Rose and Christopher Tabori. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Exlax. I'll be back shortly with Act One. The legends of lycanthropy must be as old as man himself. And believe it or not, the werewolf, or wolfman, is still a valid phenomenon today in certain parts of the world. But that is a pathological phenomenon, a psychiatric descent into cannibalism and bestiality, which has little to do with legend. That's what this story is about, the terrible, spine-chilling transformation of man to ravening beast. The legendary spirits that haunt the Harz Mountains of Germany, and the blood-curdling phantom with the snarling mouth and flesh-destroying claws, the lips bared to reveal the great knives of the canine teeth, and the travesty of a smile that means death, the werewolf.
The dumped wolf, why doesn't he be quiet?
They are incredible, Wilhelm. Somehow they smell blood.
How? The animal must be a league away. What are you? Medical doctor or witch doctor, Franz Baum?
The first, I hope. But I have also lived my life in the shadow of these mountains.
How's the boy?
We can let Herman answer that for himself. You feel better from the bleeding?
I don't know, Herr Doctor. I feel weak as a kitten still.
Of course. But I think the fever has abated. Yes, give me a fresh damp cloth. Wilhelm.
Ah, the water is all but gone. I'll have Marcella bring some.
First, let us rid ourselves of this basin of blood. No sight for a young girl.
I'll throw it in the mitten.
No. You dare not do that. That wolf out there, whatever he is, don't do anything to attract him to your house. I will rid you of the blood I have let.
How?
I have some containers. I'll take it back to Coburg. With me, I can use it for my experiments. Sleep, my boy, and wake refreshed.
I'm afraid that's just what I'm going to do.
Doctor, is he all right?
Of course. I gave him a draught to help him rest.
Ah, I must get my gun.
Time enough. Let me get away. It grows dark.
You are sure Herman will recover?
I have every hope. But really, Wilhelm, I must protest again. This lost woodsman's cottage on the edge of nowhere is not a place to bind your children to.
Franz, let us not argue it again. You know why I hide here like a criminal. Why do I say like a criminal? I am one in the eyes of the law. I thought you said Herman was asleep.
I hope. But you're speaking loud enough for Marcel and your little boy Caesar to hear. Sounds carry in such a small cabin. From outside as well as in, it seems.
Damned wolf.
Papa, come quickly. He's just terrified. He's hiding below the bed and won't come out.
No, hush, darling. I'm just going to get my gun.
Better I leave, Wilhelm. Once I am gone, your wolf will not trouble you, I think. I carry away in my bag the scent which tempted him here.
I don't care what tempted him here. I've put a bullet in him.
Oh, Herr Dr. Baum, why do we stay here hidden in the forest?
It is your father's whim, dear Marcella.
How is Hermann?
Your brother is resting quietly now. I'll be back to see him as soon as I may. But I think we have drawn away the fever from within him.
How can I help?
Bring him some fresh, cool towels, Marcella. See that he sleeps. Keep him...
I've got to go to Caesar. He'll be scared. Did you kill that terrible wolf, Papa?
Ah, no, just grazed him. Go tend to Caesar, Marcella.
Yes, Papa.
Where was it?
Damn near inside the house, scrabbling at a back window. An unusual creature. You know, it was pure white, with fur like ermine.
A white wolf?
Yeah, against the snow it moved like a ghost.
But at all events, it is gone.
Yes.
Then I will take with me the blood scent that brought it here.
But what about Herman?
I shall return within the month, unless I can persuade you to abandon the wilderness come back to the world, I have a deep fear there is some evil threat about you in these haunted mountains.
You mean this white wolf?
I really don't know what I mean, old friend. I am a man of science until I return to these tree-shrouded slopes, and then I become...
Become what?
Primitive, afraid of all I do not know, or am afraid to know, afraid of the dark which I must run to escape, afraid of myself because I have no resource with all my learning to stifle primeval fear. Darkening woods and tortured hills are somehow unnatural. Supernatural.
My name is Herman, and I was born in the year 1763. I'm now 21 years old, and I live with my father, my sister Marcella, who's almost 20, and my brother Caesar, who is 11, in a woodsman's cabin deep in the Harz Mountains. The nearest house to us is several leagues, and the nearest town over 25. I recite all these facts to myself, light-headed with this raging fever, and sorrowing that we must all live this isolated life. Why? I do not know. There is something quite terrible in my father's background, of which he will not speak. I wonder how long I have been ill, floating half in this world and half, perhaps, in some dread other. Now at least the pounding in my head is gone. The ache is washing away from my bones, and I feel myself coming back.
Come, Herman. That's better. Take some more soup. You need to build back your strength.
Never fear. I'm on the mend.
Thank God for Dr. Baum. Oh, why must we stay buried here?
I don't know, little one. But I think the time has come for us to get back among people again.
You think you could convince Papa?
Well, I can try. Where is Father?
Out hunting, he says. But I think he searches for only one thing.
What?
The white wolf.
The what? But that wolf meat isn't good to eat.
He's not hunting it for food. Just to kill it.
But why?
Because the stories, the legends about the spirits here in the mountains.
You mean the werewolves? That is an old wives' tale.
I don't know. Something almost human about its voice. And it doesn't sound like a man, but like a woman.
A woman?
Yes. You know something, Herman? Why, I am really most afraid.
Why?
Because I think it is me she really comes for. You hear? As if she were calling me.
Well, that's stopping your white wolf. Father's killed her.
No. He missed her again. He always misses.
My little sister, you give me 3 or 4 days to mend my health with your good soups and your good cooking, and I will shoot your white wolf for you. In the days after my sister had told me of the white wolf, my dreams had been haunted by visions of the animal's shape twisting and coiling into a pillar of steam which gradually congealed in the cold into the body of a woman. With corded arms like the feet of some prehensile bird and huge talons built to rip and tear. Within the week, I felt myself again, so much myself, that one morning when we heard... Well, this time I resolved that I should go along with my father.
Ah, it is bitter cold. The snow makes heavy going, Herman. Are you sure you are up to this?
I'm fine now, Father. And I want at least one glimpse of this white wolf of yours.
Not mine till I put a bullet through its head.
Father, why must we stay buried in this wilderness? Why don't we forget the wolf and this rough life and go back to Coburg?
It is not the first time you have asked the question.
Nor the last.
Very well, you are old enough to know. Let us get out of the wind and under the protection of the trees. And while we build a fire to warm the soup Marcella sent with us, I will tell you the truth at last. I have tried to bury the secret, but you are of age. You have a right to know. You already remember that this is not our home, that we are from Transylvania.
I remember the long journey here after our mother died.
She did not die, son. She was killed. I killed her.
What?
In those happier days, I was steward to the Margrave. I was my lord's most trusted servant, successful and happy. And in return, he had all my faith and loyalty. Until that terrible night when I returned unexpectedly from a mission he had sent me on to find him with your mother, who was so beautiful and I thought so innocent. My reaction was immediate. Before I knew it, my gun had resounded twice, and both of them were dead. No use to try to tell authorities the provocation. To murder such an eminent man had no justification in their eyes, nor in the laws of that feudal state. I gathered all my money and the three of you children and fled to this retreat where we live now. Herman, that is the way of it. Blame me or not as you will. I carry the burden of it on my shoulders, sure that Almighty God will visit me someday with the punishment I have tried so hard to avoid. But what is that?
There. Through the trees, just beyond the turn that comes into this clearing.
The White Wolf. My gun.
No. I have a bead on it already. I may have better luck than you, Father.
Shh.
Don't move.
Wait till you see it clear. And make sure.
I have her right in my sight.
Her?
Marcella thinks the wolf is a female. And
no!
Why did you knock the gun in the air?
Herman, don't you see? It is not a wolf who comes to us. It is a woman. And a beautiful one at that.
How fortunate that young Herman did not kill this lovely woman who had materialized as though out of nowhere. Or would it have been, in hindsight, so terrible a thing? Let's wait for the woman to declare herself first before we judge. I shall be back shortly with Act Two.
Werewolf or she-wolf? We'll find out.
Yes, transformation might not just only happen to men, or, you know, what was that saying? Those that are bitten by the wolf, is that something? What was that? How does that go, Dale?
What did Maria Ospenskaya say just yesterday? I believe he was bitten by a werewolf becomes a werewolf himself.
Yes. But this is a gothic tale that's been around for many moons, adapted by Arnold Moss, or I forget it at the second. Let me get back up here.
While you're looking, even a man who's pure in heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms. And the autumn moon is bright.
Incorrect. Ian Martin was the one that adapted this story. And Krista Tavori and Norman Rose are leads in this. Of course, Norman Rose was the kind of announcer, no, not really announcer, the narrator of the wonderful Dimension X series. Many X-1s as well, but that, if you're wondering where you remember his voice from, Dimension X, he was in every episode of Dimension X, not really as an announcer, but as a narrator. He kind of, in a sense, hosted it. And of all the big shows, science fiction shows of the 50s, probably the two biggest were Dimension X, and it wasn't the first. It wasn't too far from being first, 2000 plus, and the CBS one, they beat it slightly. We're talking by about a couple months. But Dimension X outlasted it. And, of course, X Minus One, which used many same scripts and in some cases some of the same actors, were also ran longer than probably all those other science fiction radio dramas put together, the X Minus One.
Yep, and if you like those shows, X Minus One, Dimension X, next weekend we'll give you the full rundown later on when we wind things down towards the end of this show. But we've got much more of CBS Radio Mystery Theater, a good gothic tale coming on here. I like the way it's building up so far.
Yeah, they do tell, and the nice thing, you know, they have about 40 minutes to tell a story, and the half hour, you know, the half hour shows, they have at best about 25 minutes. So it's very interesting because when you get a lot of these shows that we get to present, if they've got the like some of these shadows, they even have the openings cut out and they have the commercials cut out, and they come to 24 minutes and change. You know, you're getting a full 40 minutes, which is shoot almost double the time to tell the story. Sometimes, you know, maybe it feels like it's dragging a little bit, but not always. I think because it just. They're so wonderful at weaving these tales.
Yeah, and sometimes you need that to tell certain tales. There are certain shows that, in my opinion, shouldn't be done in a half an hour, you know, or a half-hour format, which is really, what, 20, 25 minutes. So,
right.
That's another remarkable thing about CBS Radio Mystery Theater is how many of them they did in that hour format.
Took a lot of writers and a lot of actors and certainly a lot of drive from the driving force, Hyman Brown, who was always a bundle of energy. And just look at all the thousands of shows he produced during the Golden Age of Radio. And it wasn't that he just took shows. Many shows that he did are shows that he created. He didn't just direct them and produce them. In many cases, he created them as well.
Just
such a tremendous
amount. Brought it all together and left us with a good body of work to share with you. And let's continue with part two of CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The White Wolf.
For a moment, Herman and his father are transfixed. The older man by the dark beauty of the woman, who, even stumbling and reeling from exhaustion, manages to retain an air of grace. The younger man, appalled that, but for his father's hastily flung arm that allowed the carefully aimed gun to discharge harmlessly in the air, he might have ended her life. Then, suddenly coming out of shock, both men rush to her aid.
Are you all right, Fräulein?
Just tired. I'm frozen. Oh, my father?
Come to the fire and warm yourself. Where is your father?
The horse tumbled, and we were both thrown from it. I landed in the snow. But my father, he must have hit his head on a rock. I couldn't rouse him, and our horse ran away.
You stay with my father, and I'll see to yours. I ran quickly into the forest by the path from which she had appeared. Racing through the twists and turns, I seemed to be in some enchanted palace. The snow-laden trees, frozen by the cold, forming a shimmering, otherworldly ceiling over my head. Before I knew it, I was slithering and slipping into a declivity. Lying at the bottom, facing me, was the figure of a man richly dressed in a velvet tunic, overlaid with a magnificent cape trimmed in fur. Sir?
I think I must have been stunned a moment. Never mind that. My daughter?
Have no fear, sir. She's with my father. Not over 200 yards from here. She found us and sent us to your aid.
Oh, thanks be to God. We were both at the end of our tether. Krantz, did you say your name was?
Jamanherr.
Your father could not by any chance be Wilhelm Krantz?
Yes, that's his name.
Must be fate. Help me to my feet, boy, and onto my horse. Then lead me to my daughter and your father.
And that is how we discovered and brought Manfred of Barnsdorf and his daughter Christina into our home and into our lives. From the beginning, our father was enchanted with her silvery voice and her ethereal beauty, and of course, by the common heritage that we shared with Manfred.
It is fortunate we found you hunting.
I was only lured outside in pursuit of a large white wolf which has been haunting our premises of late.
Yes.
Our quarters are small, but you are welcome to shelter here for as long as it takes you to recover. You said you come from Transylvania.
Even so, mein Herr. I was a chamberlain in the service of the House of Verneigen.
Even as I once was to the Margrave of Bitterstein. But why would you leave such a fine position?
You may well ask. My master conceived a desire for my daughter, not as legal wife, but simply to use for his pleasure. And it ended up by my giving him a few inches of my hunting knife.
Then we are brothers in misfortune, my dear sir.
Brother indeed. And you need not renew your grief by telling me your story, which I know only too well. We are comrades in misfortune.
Well, you shall make this your home as long as you desire.
Did you hear, Marcella?
Yes, brother.
It seems our family is to be enlarged.
Oh, I pray not.
Why?
I don't know. I cannot bear to look on that woman. For all her beauty, she frightens me so.
Although I was fascinated with Christina, some deep chord in me echoed Marcella's fear. Yet it seemed unreasonable, for Christina was a lovely woman, her features classically molded. Her mouth was a dark red, startlingly vivid against the pastel of her other color, and somewhat larger when it was open, revealing the most brilliantly white teeth I have ever beheld. I'll never forget the night I heard my father and Manfred talking together almost a month after they had come to live with us.
If it is Christina's will, of course you may have my daughter's hand in marriage. And I shall leave you now that my head has mended and find habitation elsewhere.
Why not remain here, Manfred?
No, I am called elsewhere.
But I...
Let what I say suffice. Ask no more questions. You may have my child.
I thank you for her truly and will duly value her. There is, however, one difficulty.
I can guess what you would say. There is no priest here in this wild country, nor is there law to bind. Still, there must pass between you some ceremony to satisfy a father.
Of course. But what?
Will you consent to marry her after my fashion?
Yes, I will.
Then I shall marry you directly. Christina.
Yes, Father?
I wish you in here directly.
Coming.
I will get my children.
No need. This is amongst us elders.
What is your wish, Father?
Less my wish than yours. You wish to marry Wilhelm?
If it is his wish, it is my dearest one.
Then come. Take hands.
What is that?
Your wedding march. You have her hand?
Yes.
Then swear by all the spirits of the Hartz Mountain.
I swear, but why not by heaven?
Because it is not my humor. If I prefer an oath less binding, will you deny me?
Do you want me to swear by what I do not believe?
Will you be married, or shall I take my daughter away with me?
What will you have me swear?
By all the spirits of the Hartz Mountains, by all their power for good and evil, that you take Christina to be your lawful wedded wife, that you will protect her, cherish her, and love her, that your hand shall never be raised against her to harm her.
I do solemnly swear.
And swear that if you fail in this vow, may all the vengeance of the spirits fall upon you and your children. May their flesh be torn from their limbs and their bones blanch in the wilderness, and that to this oath you pledge their blood. Swear.
I swear.
Such was the second marriage of my father. From the inner room of the cottage, peering through a crack in the door, we three children watched. I with an arm about Caesar, who was struck dumb, and my sister Marcella, who was trembling from hand to foot with fright and despair. The next morning, our life with our stepmother began.
Marcella, come here at once. Marcella!
I'm sorry.
Yes? Who?
Yes, Mother.
You find it so difficult to say?
Yes. No. I mean, just strange.
How do you mean, strange?
Just that my real mother has been... I mean, we have had no mother for so long that it's hard to say.
You will learn to say it. And to treat me as one, and to obey me. All of you. And when I call, I want you to come quicker.
Sorry,
Sorry, who?
I'm sorry, Mother. I was preparing a soup for
who
the
told
dinner.
You to do that?
Why, no one. But I always
From
cook
now
for...
on, I will be in charge of what we eat. You will cook and clean and wash the dishes and do the household chores. But I decide what we eat and how we eat it.
Yes, Mother.
That's better. Now, you can prepare the vegetables and set the table. I will prepare the meat.
Herman, wake up.
Well, what is it?
Shh, it's her.
Who?
The stepmother. She's gone out.
Gone out?
Yes. Gone out the door and in her night clothes.
Are you sure? In this winter weather, not dressed, with snow on the ground? Good Lord. There's a wolf, she'll be torn to pieces. But apparently, she bore a charmed life. For a few minutes later, we watched her return, still in her nightdress. She went to a pail of water, washed her hands and face carefully, and return to bed. All this, I may say, I watched as in a dream, for my fever was coming back on me. So much so, I had to take to my bed again, and through the days was able to watch how cruel and demanding my stepmother was to Marcella and Caesar, and to learn that every night, the moon now being full, she stole outside in her nightdress to Rome.
Herman, wake up. Oh, wake up.
Yes, I'm awake. I'm awake.
Forgive me for bothering you when you were sick. But I'm almost out of my mind.
But what is it, dear sister?
Her again. She's out prowling the night. And it's bitter cold with the snow coming down. It's not human. Listen to that.
I'm almost ready to pray the wolves might get her.
They'll never get her. It isn't wolves. Only one. I looked out of the window. The moon is full and high. It's that special one. The white wolf.
Who fired that shot?
Oh, it must have been Caesar.
Caesar?
Yes. He knew you were sick. And he's been bragging to me how he could take your place and guard us all. Oh, that's why I woke you. Somehow he followed her into the night.
Well, at least he seems to have driven off the wolf. Marcella, help me out of bed.
No, you have the fever, and I...
What's that?
Shh, it's her. Her dress all bloody. And she's alone. But where? Oh, dear sweet God. Where is our little brother?
Behind the the door, the watching girl suddenly feels the blood drain from her head, and a wave of faintness makes her reach for support. In the room outside, the woman turns, moving silently to her bedroom, her wide mouth open in a caricature of a smile. There is blood on her gleaming teeth. I shall return shortly with Act 3.
And we are setting up for some kind of finish right here with more gothic horror and this white wolf.
Yeah, I thought I'd touch a little bit on Norman Rose. I just talked a little bit about him being Dimension X. Well, American actor, film narrator, and radio announcer, whose velvety baritone was often called the voice of God by colleagues. He was known as the voice of the fictitious coffee grower Juan Valdez in Columbia Coffee television commercials, and was narrator of, as we said, Dimension X. Out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, he was started acting while he was a student at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. He honed his craft in Actor's Studio Drama School in New York, landed parts and plays on Broadway. He was a narrator for the satirical 1972 Detta Tirada, which was recorded for the National Lampoon radio or album Radio Dinner. Actually, I think Bob Dryden also did a bit on that particular album as well. It is an amazing piece of if you've never heard it, I'm sure it's on the internet. During World War II, he was recruited by the United States Office of War Information to work as a radio newscaster after the war. He lent his distinctive voice to Dimension X and Mystery Theater. He narrated Harold and the Purple Crayon in 1959, provided voices the voices for the 1963 CBS cartoon Tennessee Tuxedo and His Tales. And we remember that. Let's see. In 1948, he co-founded New Stages, an off-Broadway repertory company, with producer David Halliwell. New Stages presented the American debut of Jean-Paul Sartre's best-known play, The Respectful Prostitute. Prior to its Broadway run, Rose was an accomplished stage actor on Broadway and productions of Richard III and St. Joan, and off-Broadway's The Brothers of Karamazov. 1969 to 1974, he stepped in front of the camera to portray the same character, psychiatrist Dr. Marcus Polk, on two different ABC soap operas that was at the same time, One Life to Live and All My Children. He also appeared in the soap opera The Edge of Night and Search for Tomorrow. In addition to the work he did in numerous television commercials, Rose was one of the voices of promotional announcements for NBC and later ABC television networks from the late 1960s through the early 1990s. He also did the voiceover for The Message from Space and from Destroy All Monsters. He also was a newsreel announcer. Yeah. And he was also the newsreel announcer on Mike Nichols' Biloxi Blues. And he was seen on The Joe Louis Story, The Violators, in 1957, Jump in 1971, Sidney Lumet's The Anderson Tapes in 1971, Who Killed Mary What's-Her-Name in 1971, and Martin Ritz's The Front, 1976, also starring Woody Allen. He also narrated the 1989 film documentary How Hitler Lost the War. So, one more bit note here. He was also the off-screen narrator for the telecast of Mikhail Baryshnikov's production of the ballet The Nutcracker in 1977. Production has been repeated many times on television, available on DVD as well. So the man was really quite the actor, mostly with his voice, but upon occasion, he got to step in front of that camera as well.
A fine career, but did he ever do Riverdance? That's the thing.
Yeah. Hard to tell. Hard to tell. You never know.
Until you do Riverdance, I have no idea why I'm saying this. I have no idea. You got Riverdance on the brain. Maybe later I'll take a tranquilizer. We'll find out.
Hey, how do you like that wedding? How do you like that wedding vow he took?
Oh my gosh! As we were talking about in the chat, it reminds me of my mother-in-law. Oh,
I want your soul. Give me your soul. I'll eat it. It's so good.
Oh, God. That's the irony, okay, in my life, Dave. My first wife, I loved my in-laws. They were the greatest people in the world, you know.
Uh-huh.
And my father-in-law, who's no longer with us, he was a cool guy, but the mother-in-law,
sometimes it's best not to say, that's all.
That's right. You may invoke Satan by mentioning his or her name.
That's right. You know, pretty soon we'll be hearing that thunderclaps coming from that side of Cleveland. Got to be careful.
Yeah. You'll know I misspoke. I spoke out of turn. Pretty scary tale. I'm curious to see. It's almost 100% clear now that we've got a female werewolf here, a she-wolf. And we're going to find out in just a minute as we wrap up The White Wolf from CBS Radio Mystery Theater from way back in 1970s.
The moon is now obscured by dark clouds heavy with snow. Outside the cabin, the snow is pouring down. And what might be a small figure dark against the snow has now become only a minor unevenness in the white carpet. Inside the cottage, Marcella, noticing her brother's weakness, has gone to his aid.
Herman, brother, let me help you lie down.
No. I'm all right. You watch her. What is she doing now?
She's going into their bedroom. Shh. Wait.
Who is it?
Lie still, dearest. It's only me. I have lighted the fire to warm some water. I'm not quite well.
What? I'll get up, Christina.
No need. It's nothing. I can manage myself.
Tell me, what is she doing now?
Stirring up the fire. And now she is changing her linen and... Oh! Her right leg is bleeding.
Wait, let me see for myself. As I watched in horror, half supported by my little sister, I saw the wound in her leg. There was no mistaking that a bullet had grazed her. I fought back the red mist that was beginning to swim before my eyes long enough to see her remove those parts of clothing that were stained with blood and burn them in the fire after bandaging her leg. Then as she sat huddled before the flames, the last thing I saw was her wiping her lips daintily and casting the kerchief into the roaring blaze. When I woke up, Marcella was sitting in a chair by my bed.
All right, Herman?
Yes. I feel better, but weak.
The fever's gone.
You were with me all night?
I was afraid to go to bed. She's still sitting there in front of the fire.
And Caesar, did he come back?
No. He never returned. Oh, Hem, where is he? How was she wounded unless it was from his gun? And if that's how she was wounded, then that means that she's...
Morning, Christina, my dear. You're up and about early.
I thought to make you a breakfast.
Why? Where is Marcella and the boy?
Hey, quick, go ask him, where is Caesar?
All right.
Oh, there you are, Marcella. What are you doing in Herman's room?
If you please, Father, Hermann has the fever again. He cannot rise from his bed. Where is my little brother, Caesar?
Is he not in his room?
No, his bed has not been slept in. And he is nowhere in the house.
Oh, merciful heavens. Perhaps that's what woke me. I was restless and not feeling well, and I thought I heard the door latch opening. But when I came out, the room was empty. Why would the boy...
What is it, Christina?
My dear husband, nothing, I hope. But your gun is missing. It's no longer hanging over the chimney.
Father, Papa, I thought I heard the white wolf last night, and
hush, hush, child, a little boy. Christina, hand me my broad axe.
Leaning weakly against the door, I had heard and seen all this. And when my father went out without another word in the short while he was gone, I was able to dress myself so that I was just coming out into the main room as he returned.
Caesar! Oh, no! No!
No, clear the table, Christina, so I may lay him down.
Yes, husband.
Stop your weeping, girl, and help her.
Yes, Papa. You may put him down now, Wilhelm.
Yes. Ah, poor, broken little body. Savaged and mangled.
The boy must have taken your gun down and gone after some wolf. But the animal was too powerful for him. Oh, poor child. A dear price to pay for such rashness.
For 3 days while the family mourned, I lay in a stupor. You see, my days and nights were filled with fevered dreams through which a great white wolf ran snarling, slashing at me with gleaming white fangs. Waking sometimes, I seemed to see my stepmother's face floating above me. And through my twisting, fevered tossings, again and again with the looming of night beneath my window about the house, I heard the growl of a wolf. One day, I came back to my senses to find Marcella sitting beside me, holding my hand.
Oh, you're awake. Can I get you something?
No. I'm all right again, I think. How long have I been...
Almost a week.
Are you all right?
Yes.
But Caesar... Oh, I seem to remember Marcella.
He's dead, Brother dear. Every day I've wanted to go to his grave and pray. Papa has kept us all here in mourning. Today, Father went. My constant urging to make sure that all was well.
And was it?
He hasn't returned yet.
And the stepmother...
I'll be glad to know that I'm in the best of health. I'm sorry for your indisposition. You must be very weak.
Thank you, but I'll soon have my strength back. Dr. Baum is due to return soon. He'll have me on my feet in no time. For that matter, I feel fine now.
Where is everyone?
In Hermann's room, husband dear.
Can you imagine, Christina, that those wolves, perdition take their whole species, have contrived to dig up my poor boy, and there is nothing left but his bones.
Oh, no. No, that's impossible.
Not so, Papa. A wolf growls under our window every night.
Why didn't you tell me, Marcella? You wake me the next time you hear it.
I will, if...
Wilhelm. Hermann is much better, and everything is under control here. But you, poor husband, you've had such a shock. Come away with me. Let me soothe you in your grief.
But how could they have moved those stones?
What were you going to say to Father?
I was going to say that all this week while you lay in fever and Father mourned, every night without fail, she left after midnight and was gone till early morning hours. Where do you think she went?
I shudder to imagine. But one thing I do know, you or I could be next. We must get away from here.
It cannot be too soon for me. The moment you are strong enough.
Yes, I agree. Until then, we must stay together, always.
Except when Papa is in the house. You're safe with him. But he could be in danger, too.
Well, it's a danger he'll have to face. Perhaps this is his retribution for killing our mother. Remember, I told you.
Yes. But first. We must think of you. And then when the time comes, we will do what has to be done.
When the time comes. How bitterly I blame myself for not moving immediately, as I should have. Dr. Baum arrived suddenly, just as I had a full remission of my fevers and my weakness. I was still abed, but ready to rise. More ready, I suppose, than the good doctor realized, else I would never have heard his fatal words.
These anemic conditions, a kind of cancer of the blood for which there is no known cure yet. Some colleagues lean to the name leukemia, but even in the enlightened 18th century, we have no way to stop it from being terminal.
How long?
Who knows exactly? A week, a month, and certainly not much longer. Probably sooner than later.
I stumbled away from inside the front door where I had been listening. I fell on my bed and wept. Why? Why had God singled me out for this fate? By that very night, I was to know. It was shortly before twilight when the doctor left. An hour, perhaps a little longer, had passed. When suddenly, I was summoned out of my melancholy by... Marcella! Marcella! Father, where is she?
She went out to pick some herbs for dinner.
No, I don't mean my sister. I mean your wife.
Christina, out walking.
Not Christina. She is the White Wolf. Don't you know what you married?
Oh, Herman, Herman, my poor boy. You are under the influence of a fever. You don't know what you're saying.
Oh, don't I? Well, look. There. There, you see.
That damned White Wolf. Give me my gun. What is it, Christina? What is it?
Did you see a White Wolf?
Yes, but what is it?
Oh, it's too horrible to think of. Marcella. Oh, no. No, no, I can't say it. She's...
not dead.
I'm afraid so, my loving stepson. That wolf has torn her to pieces.
For several days, I thought my father would never recover from the shock of losing his second child. I was numb myself. Together, we buried her. Although it was 2 days before he could bear to consign Marcella to what he called her last resting place. If only that could have been true. But the monster was not yet satisfied. Nor was I. On the third night after my sister was buried, I watched that foul woman, or whatever she was, rise and leave the house immediately. I went and wakened my father.
Who is it?
It's Herman, father. You come with me.
But where are we going? What are you doing with my gun?
We're going to kill the White Wolf. But first, I want you to see her for what she really is. It was bright moonlight as I led my father to my sister's grave. And there, oh, too ghastly to relate, was my stepmother in her white nightgown, tearing away the stones piled above the grave. She was frantic with haste. In a moment, she was in the grave and ready to rend the sweet flesh apart with her hands, ready to devour it.
Oh, great God in heaven.
Your wife, or what passes for one, see what you sold yourself and us to. This time, I will make sure there is no miss. Dropped like a stone. A bullet through her head. We rushed to the grave. But imagine our horror to find, lying across the remains of my dead sister, not my stepmother, but the body of a large white wolf.
What have you done to my daughter, Wilhelm? Where is she?
Where she should be, Manfred of Bonsdorf. Where fiends belong. In hell, I hope.
Remember your oath that you would never harm her.
I made no compact with evil spirits.
You did. And if you failed in your vow, your children were to meet the vengeance of the spirits. to perish and their bones blanch in the wilderness, as yours shall do for what you have done to my daughter. A bullet for a bullet. But my daughter is immortal and will wreak her revenge on the last of your blood. Up, Christina, up!
Great weakness was upon me again, and I watched transfixed as in a flare of lightning the body of the wolf twitched and then dissolved in a blinding white light, out of which Christina appeared. Taking her father's hands, she leapt up behind them on the horse, her voice carrying on the wind as they disappeared.
I will be back for you, Herman. Never fear. I will be back.
Somehow I brought my father home to die. And somehow I buried him beside my sister and my brother. Then the fever overwhelmed me. I lie now in my bed, weak and helpless, waiting for her to come. The white wolf, the glistening teeth bared, the fangs ready to sink into my throat and slake her insatiable thirst on the blood which first attracted her to this mountain cottage. I wait in eager anticipation. No bullet, no dagger, no mortal means could damage this white wolf. Only the tainted blood which flows through my veins. And so, by an ironic twist of the Almighty, will bring her to the death she so richly deserves. Come, Ilion, come. Sink your fangs and drink my blood so that in dying I can send you to burn to hell for all eternity.
Feel a shudder run through you, an icy wave of distaste chill the spine. The chance you take, you know, when I open that door and invite you in. I promise you a gripping tale, not always a nice one. But if you've listened to this late at night, sleep easy. The white wolf is dead. I shall be back shortly.
I guess I'm lucky. My family's always been healthy. Oh, a touch of constipation now and then. But we've got X-Lax for that.
When you need a laxative, shouldn't your first choice be the one more families buy than any other? That's today's X-Lax. Families like the chocolatey taste. You'll like the way X-Lax works, gently overnight for relief in the morning. Next time, make gentle chocolatey X-Lax your first choice for occasional use only as directed.
We've always been healthy. And X-Lax is part of that.
I know there is a move afoot to persuade us that the wolf is a much maligned creature, that he is a loving, a good companion, and never kills except for food and sustenance. I'm sure it may be so. But I'll take it on faith. I don't want to prove it by testing the theory. Personally, every time I hear a wolf howl, which is not often, I'm glad to say, I'm tempted to revert to childhood and hide my head under the nearest blanket. Our cast included Norman Rose, Christopher Tabori, Jada Rowland, Ann Shepherd, and Paul Tripp. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
believe you. You gotta love it when pleasant dreams is almost a question, as E.G. Marshall does.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just another wonderful tale coming to us from the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Yes, and we'll be bringing those more and more and more in the future. We'll tell you all about next week in just a little while, but first, we got to learn something here. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garrulous Moral of the Story.
Yes, apology cigar. White Wolf is bad. Gray Wolf is bad. Hollywood Wolf is bad. In fact, the only good wolf is Hungry Wolf Whiskey. There you go.
Bye-bye. Okay. Bye. It was the newest soundbite. It didn't go with anything. I just felt the urge to play a soundbite. It's movie sound
yeah.
Called Tourette's. I told you I have this problem.
Oh, anyway,
that's
another
tale. That's
when I'm
cleaning the litter box. When I'm cleaning the litter box and bringing packages of goodies upstairs to put in the garbage from the basement, I always quote that heavy woman from the movie The Car when she was cursing at the car from the cemetery and yelled, "Cat poo!" That was her great curse. Cat poo! Funny stuff.
You know, Vera Wolf, in all of his books and all, just about the worst thing he ever said as a curse was phooey.
Really, though?
Phooey?
Wow, Nero Wolfe, of all people, with the type of stories he wrote, you would think somebody would get a damn or a hell in there, but apparently he got the phooey.
I've always enjoyed the radio adaption. The great one with that NBC did, The New Adventures, where they certainly had Sidney Greenstreet as Nero Wolfe. But the CBC did a wonderful version as well. You can catch those out on the internet. And they are hour-long stories. And so they do, at some point, someone kind of drag along. But it's just very interesting. He's such a unique character. Very seldom leaves his house because he doesn't like fresh air because fresh air has too many germs and so he stay in his house and keep it all shut up. But, you know, in the summertime when you're cooking to death and he won't open a window, a man who just such a unique person, and yet one of the most organized brains, I guess you could say, in detective history.
Yep, and you can bet we're going to have more Nero Wolfe stories coming your way here in radio form. And,
most of
lots of time left here before 8 o'clock. Maybe we should spin that wheel, Dave. What do you think?
Well, we could. I let Gar spin it last night. You stepped out of the room. Would you like to step up and give it a spin?
I wouldn't mind at all. Step right back into the studio. Be glad to do that. Ah, there's the wheel right there by the drinking fountain.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Well, who is it?
Danny Kaye. Come on in, Danny.
Danny Kaye.
Well, hello, Danny.
Hello, Jack Benny.
But, Daddy, this is such a surprise coming right out on my program. It's...
Oh, stop stuttering. I'm not going to charge you for it.
Oh. Now, Jack, the reason I'm here is... Well, because every time you come to Palm Springs, you always do an informal show. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Well, some of the boys at the club cooked up an idea that I'm sure you're going to like.
What is it?
Well, we decided to form a quartet and sing the song you wrote.
My song?
Mm-hmm.
When you say I beg your pardon, then I'll come back to you.
Suddenly I'm sick.
What?
Oh, anyway, Jack, the other three fellas are out outside. Can I call them in?
Three fellas, who are they?
Yeah, well, Frank Sinatra, George Burns, and Groucho Marx.
Groucho. Hello, fellas.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. That's brilliant dialogue.
Well, welcome to the show, fellas. And if you say the magic word, you get a bottle of suntan oil.
Say, Jack, that reminds me.
Huh?
Jack?
What?
That reminds me.
Huh?
That bottle of suntan oil you sold me was much too greasy, and boy, was I embarrassed.
Why? What happened?
Well, yesterday when I put some on, I slipped right out of my suit.
No kidding.
Look, fellas, I came here to sing, so let's do it and get it over with, okay?
Okay.
When I say I beg your pardon.
Hold it.
Not yet.
When I say
I. Groucho, that's me.
I may sing lousy, but I'm grammatically correct.
I'm sorry.
I'm Groucho.
Fellas, come on now. Let's sing Jack's song. And fellas, I want to tell you how much I appreciate your coming over to do it. No one but real friends, real pals, would give up a Sunday afternoon just to come over here and do this wonderful
Jack,
song.
What? Shut up.
Oh. All right, fellas, let's take it.
Now, what key are we going to sing it in, Danny?
It'll help if we all take different ones.
Look, boy. All right, fellas, let's go. Can we have a nice introduction, please? Now.
When I say I beg your pardon,
then I'll come
back to you. When you ask me to forgive you, I'll return.
Like the swallows at Serrano, return to Capistrano. For you, my heart will always, always yearn.
Will always yearn.
Sorry, and I will understand. This the harvest moon will pledge our love. And now, honey child, don't be listening to anybody else. We're parting, but going back to whence we started. And sweetheart, I'll come back to you.
When I say a big good morning, then I'll come back to you.
So, my darling, though we've parted, come back to whence we've started.
And, sweetheart, I'll come back to you.
Thank you.
is a great piece. It's been sitting in our library for a long, long time here in the studio, and it finally came up randomly on the wheel. It's amazing.
Yeah, you know, you never know where that wheel's going to fall and when it's going to fall there. Yeah, this was really great. You know, Jack Benny was master of the running gag, and this was one of the great running gags he had. He wrote this song, "When You Say I Beg Your Pardon, That's When I'll Come Back to You." He did it on radio. He even carried it over to television. And one of my favorite renditions of this particular story, this particular song, was on television when he invited Peter, Paul, and Mary over to his house to sing the song. He wanted them to sing the song because he wanted them to record the song for him. And so what they did is they were in his living room and they sang a song. I thought it's a funny song, but they did an amazing job with it. And they said, "No, we can't do this. We can't do this. And they walked out. And Jack said, "Well, if you can't, you can." They walked out and said goodbye. And he went underneath his, there's a box there, you know, by the window seat there, lifted it up and pulled out a tape recorder and started playing them singing it. So it was absolutely hilarious. So that was another one of Jack Benny's great, great running gags.
Yeah. And, you know, the running gag, especially by show hosts, has been, you know, used successfully over and over and over. Carson with the great Karnak and Letterman's top 10 lists and things like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes those running gags are the best part of the show. You wonder what new twist they're going to put on the running gag. And obviously Benny was a master.
The particular people they got in there, George Burns, which is best friend and next door neighbor, Groucho Marx, and Danny Kaye and Frank Sinatra. That's the kind of stuff you could pull if you were a Jack Benny, you know?
Yeah, or an Erie House Radio.
Ah, yes, of course. How dare I forget?
Programmer Dave Binkley at the helm. I'm telling you, folks, if not for Dave, you wouldn't be getting this kind of variety, this kind of theming of shows together to make it all fun and tie it all together. There. I hope I embarrassed you, because that was
you
goal.
Did. Thank you very much. Good. Yeah, thank you. You did a wonderful job with that. Hey, speaking of theming things.
Don't toot your horn enough. You don't toot your own horn enough, so let me do it.
Speaking of theming things up, next week was a great event in the life of Dale and I when we were growing up. Two different parts of the geographic location, but the entire world was watching as Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin stepped onto the moon. And that's what we're celebrating next week.
Yes, the moon landing in July 1969. I was but a lad of nine, and it was such an exciting event. There were premiums. I remember because it was on very late, as I recall. It was late at night. It might have even been a school night, possibly. I don't remember for certain. But, you know, of course, being historical, we were allowed to stay up and watch it. And there was a premium inside Wonder Bread, and they had a lunar lander inside. It was a punch-out thing, and I mean it was intricate. It must have had 40, 50 parts to it. And for a young, impatient kid, you know, hey, it keeps you out of mom's hair for like an hour or two. And I remember putting that together while excitedly waiting for the moon landing. And I fell asleep on the couch before the actual landing, but was woken up in time to watch that historic first step for a man, giant leap for mankind.
Yep, and mine was somewhat similar. Of course, it was way past my bedtime. But and my parents, who weren't big television people at all, they had television more because we were there than because they would watch it. But when it was about to happen, my parents went and got my sister. I think my brother was just too young at that point, but got my sister and I up because they knew what a historic moment this was going to be, and that really, I think, shaped our whole generation, Dale, into the interest in space and space exploration.
I often wonder, Dave, because this was about the turning point. We were already coming close. in the mid and late 60s to getting there. We knew we were going there. That was the goal. Kennedy sent the benchmark when he made his famous speech about we choose to travel to the moon. and by gosh, we did it. He sadly didn't live to see it. We all know the history there. But it was around that time, Dave, that the quality of science fiction in motion pictures, probably in radio too, I'm sure CBS Radio Mystery Theater was equally impacted. The ability to make effects that really simulated what space travelers would see and experience, you know, dramatized, of course. You know, there's certain things that are not scientifically sound in the excitement of space movies, the lack of sound and things like that. But right. Still, I just wonder how much the space program impacted motion pictures and pop culture beyond the obvious, you know what I mean?
There was because of the moon landing, because remember, we got beat. They had the Russians had the first satellite in space, the Sputnik. They had the first man into space. They threw the first woman into space. Every step that we took, the Russians were half a step in front of us. The only way we could beat them was by getting on the moon, and that is what we did. And what's interesting is next week we will be presenting, I think it's six different tales of like essentially a first trip to the moon, and it's all well before the closest one to it would have been, we have a Theater 5, which is from 1965 or 66, and that is the nearest thing that there was to the space landing. Everything else was from the 50s.
Yeah. Well, we got 2000 plus, the rocket and the skull, X-1, the light, Dimension X, Destination Moon. That's just Friday, gang, okay? That's Friday the 19th. And that'll start at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, by the way. The next day, Saturday, we continue our celebration of the 50th anniversary of the moon landing with Theater 5, First Encounter, as Dave mentioned, Exploring Tomorrow, First Man on the Moon, and maybe even Betty Grable will sing a little song for us. You never know.
You never know.
It might happen. But
it's
the 1950s, 60s look at what landing on the moon might be like in these various tales. So join us.
It is so neat to hear these different versions of how people thought we might do it. Before it would happen, and you think about it. Well, we'll be talking about this next week. But you know how close Jules Verne was in many ways to getting on the moon. So,
yeah, yep. Great movies that I recall about landing on the moon and space travel and things like that were among my favorite films. So I am sure that these will not disappoint either in radio. Of course, the following week, we've got some mummy stories for you. We'll get into that next weekend. Hey, it's almost 8 o'clock. You might want to start drifting on over to Gar's webpage, his Facebook page. He's probably getting ready to broadcast Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul at 8 o'clock. Dave, what can
Absolutely.
People do Monday night if they're, like, fans of the Vortex?
If you're fans of the Vortex and you can tolerate the weirdest, really bad movie, we are there on the Vortex one more time. Well, many more times, but we'll be there with actually the very third program we did, Bela Lugosi's The Phantom Ship. And this one we actually filmed 10 years ago, actually a little bit more than 10 years ago. It was our very third installment of the weirdest, really bad movie, so... tune in to see how far we've come or haven't progressed either way.
Well, you've come a long way, baby. See you next week, folks.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Perfect. Perfect.
Ooh. Ooh. Pretty amazing there, Dale.
It's like I've done this before. Well, folks listening in the archive, if you're just getting ready to sit down and chat with us, too bad, because we got stuff. We actually have lives, believe it or not, and other projects. Dave, of course, getting ready for something really exciting coming up soon.
Yeah.
We're all waiting for Spaceship One.
Yes, yeah, so if you're looking for some information on that as it comes around, we've been posting a ton of pictures from the shoots and even some screenshots from our upcoming adventure of Spaceship One. You can find it at on Facebook at TWRBM for The Weirdest Really Bad Movie, or my personal one, Dave Binkley. Or if you go to WeirdestReallyBadMovie.com, we talk a little bit about there, and we have a little, at the very least, temporary webpage there to help promote it. And I'll be working on getting some more photos up there. So much excitement I'm not going to talk about till I actually have it on film, but boy, am I going to talk about it when it's there.
Well, with that being said, folks, have a very good night. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to our show. Many more to follow, I guarantee.
And good night, Jimmy.
Good night. Good night. Night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and it could think it do. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
The opinions expressed on the Ghoul Show are not those of what the radio station WDMT.
I don't know. I get sponsors.
The sponsors.
I don't have any anyhow.
The staff and the management. Well,
management doesn't talk to me either.
Thank you.